Don't you see the danger, John, inherent in what you're doing here?
Cube design is
the most awesome force the planet's ever seen, but you wield it like a kid that's found his dad's gun.
It's hardly appropriate to start hurling generalizations.
If I may, I'll tell you the problem with the
cube design
power that you're using here. It didn't require any discipline to attain it. You know, you read what others had done, and you took the next step. You didn't earn the knowledge for yourselves, so you don't take any responsibility for it. You stood on the shoulders of geniuses to accomplish something as fast as you could, and before you even knew what you had, you patented it and packaged it and slapped it on a plastic lunchbox, and now you're selling it. You want to sell it. Well,
I don't think you're giving us our due credit.
Our cube designers
have done things which nobody's ever done before.
Yeah, but
your cube designers
were so preoccupied with whether or not they could that they didn't stop to think if they should.
All right. Are you ready to go now?
I'm ready.
Great. Then welcome to another episode of Lucky Paper Radio. My name is Andy. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Anthony, Supper Club MVG Maddox.
MVG?
Most valuable guest. I mean, MVP doesn't make sense.
Okay.
Because you're not
okay.
Playing at a supper club.
We'll see. I mean, this reminds me of a bit they have on one of my favorite podcasts, Cooking Issues, where people don't know it, but they're playing in the House Guest Olympics, and they have events like, did they bring a bottle of wine? Did they offer to help clean up? Other very funny bits.
Yeah, what else? I gotta know what else.
That's the only two I can
think of.
I'm taking
notes over here. Wine specifically, huh?
Uh-huh. Good bottle of wine.
Oh, dear. Well, what if they don't even know how to identify a good bottle of wine a priori?
Well, look, there's lots of events. You're not going to get a gold medal in all of them. That's the thing.
I demand a gold medal in all of them. I must achieve.
I made some dumplings, so hopefully that'll be a good.
Yeah, I think you're going to set the supper club ablaze with your beautiful dumplings.
Wow.
Set the night on fire, as it were. I'm going to make some scallion pancakes. It'll be fine.
That sounds great.
I love scallion pancakes. Don't get me wrong, but they ain't no fancy homemade dumplings.
I actually think scallion pancakes are much more challenging to make, so there we go.
A lot less work, though.
I don't think so. I think it's tricky.
It's not that much work. You just got to do it right.
Yeah. I mean, same with dumplings.
No, dumplings are a lot of work. You got to make each individual one by hand.
True. Okay. Well, dumplings.
Dumplings and scallion pancakes. This is not a cooking podcast, though, much to Anthony's chagrin. He kind of would like for this to be a cooking podcast,
There's so many cooking podcasts, and there's very few Magic the Gathering podcasts.
Just think about how it would change your relationship to cooking to make a podcast about it. All of a sudden, you have people up in your mentions telling you're cooking wrong.
Are you trying to, like, comfort me for not having a food podcast?
Because I could
just go do that.
Yeah, you definitely could.
I could.
But you got people that would listen. I just think it would change your relationship to it, you know?
Maybe.
Just like this podcast has ruined magic for you and I.
Exactly.
Now,
yeah,
magic is only a thing to argue about and be correct about, not a game to be played and enjoy with your friends. What's our topic tonight, Anthony?
I think we should talk about custom rules in Cube. We have a couple of them in the playgroup, so I'm talking about things like I have my Turbo Cube, you have your Degenerate Micro Cube, and we also have the Reading Rainbow Cube, where all spells are gold and you start with a particular land in play. And we talk a lot about how Cube is all about creativity and expression, and it's awesome that, like, it is the only place that you can do that. You can't necessarily show up to your commander night and just be like, oh, by the way, all my spells
but
cost
Anthony,
two less.
Rule zero.
Yeah, but that's true, but also
it's not true.
Difficult.
Anthony, it's not true.
Okay, we're arguing and being correct.
Here's the thing about rule zero, okay? Look, I'm not going to get into this deeply, but it's preposterous because that's just how the world works. If you and another consenting adult agree to do anything, then yeah, of course you can do it. There's rule zero in every format. There's rule zero in Legacy. There's rules every format you sit down. If you agree with your opponent, you can do whatever you want.
Interesting. So you show up to the Legacy tournament and you and, you know, 40
well,
other people are all
rule
just
rule zero
like
does not apply in Sanctioned Commander. It only applies in casual games. That's part of it.
Oh, I was going to suggest that we just, you know, they revolt against the judges and say like, no, we're just going to take free mulligans this all day. We don't care.
I'm just saying that you can do that already in any kind of magic on the face of planet Earth, except for Sanctioned Magic, where rule zero doesn't even apply when it comes to Commander. So the only point of even pointing that out and saying it is just as a way to push off any responsibility of a badly managed format on rule zero. Just saying.
Interesting. Okay, that's a hot take. But let's just go back to Cube here and just say, like, it really works well here because everyone's playing from the same set of cards, so there's no opportunity for it to be like,
your
oh,
opponent
wait.
Doesn't get to say, I don't agree. It's rule zero, but you're the king.
You're the rule zero. But on the other hand, even though we want to be advocates for the creativity that's possible in Cube, custom rules are also really, really challenging for a lot of ways to make them work well. And so I think what I want to do is talk a little bit about the risks and challenges with trying to customize the rules of Magic, and then talk a little bit about some of the ones that we think work really well and the details of, and the implementation details about making it a fun experience.
Sounds great to me. I definitely have been through a bit of a journey with custom rules where for a long time I was like, yeah, great, let's play some custom rules cubes. And I've played all kinds of custom rules cubes over my time as a cube player. And over time, I have gotten just more and more, I'm not going to say down on them, but a little more hesitant to just, you know, jump in enthusiastically to a custom rule format. Sometimes you're just not in the mood, man. Sometimes it's like, I don't want to have to think super hard. Magic is already hard at a baseline. If I'm just playing a cube full of core set mechanics and like really simple basic cards and no modified rules, it's already very difficult. So
right.
Putting something on top of that, sometimes I'm just like not in for it, you know?
Yeah, I'm definitely in the same situation where my enthusiasm has definitely waned. And I think the context is really important for this. And specifically for our playgroup, we just have a ton of cubes. And I think that really contributes to that feeling where it's like, I'm playing a different cube every week of the 25 cubes we have right now. And adding a custom cube in that rotation just means, well, I already have this challenge of something very novel every week. I don't necessarily need that novelty from something that is so extreme. I think what you're hitting on, though, is really important, though, that it can be really inaccessible to players at lots of different skill levels. And to people that are very enfranchised, I feel like a lot of what is fun is recontextualizing the cards and drafting them in a context where they just are being played with other cards and figuring out how to solve this new puzzle. As soon as you introduce some custom rules, you're just changing what the puzzle is. And I feel like in some ways for especially enfranchised players, that sort of breaks a little bit of the promise of, or a little bit of just the value proposition of, I'm going to solve this new puzzle. Which is weird because it can be a very new puzzle to solve, but it's something different, and it's a little bit difficult to express, but I think you're sort of touching on it and just sort of the way that you feel approaching a custom rules cube.
Here's the other thing about a custom cube, or a cube with custom rules, rather. I often expect to just totally tank the first draft, especially if I'm playing with other people that have already played with that cube's custom rules and know what's going on. I'm imagining the Cascade Cube of Zach Barish that we played at MagicCon Philly. I enjoyed that cube, but also I wouldn't expect you to tank the first couple drafts, and I sure as heck tanked the first couple drafts because I had no experience solving this brand new puzzle, and my opponents did. And it's something you said, for some nights I'm just not down to, you know, approach the table, and before we even take the first pick, just know I'm going to get thrashed all night, right?
Right.
That's not the most fun thing either.
Oh my goodness. I think I said that my first draft of that was the most one-sided Magic I have ever played. It was the most hopeless. I played against Gwen Decker, actually, who made Cube Cobra, and he just had crushing footfalls, and I lost to it every turn, every game.
Simply have engineered explosives or whatever.
Right. There's a few answers to it, but I did not know I was supposed to draft them. So there is just this challenge in that a custom rules cube can be a little bit of a added friction to experienced drafters. On the other side of that spectrum, I think it can also be really difficult for drafters that are less experienced. If you're newer to Magic, you're trying to get your feet under you, you're maybe new to Cube, trying to learn how to draft, throwing in these custom rules can just really, really make it less accessible and difficult for people to understand and evaluate what's going on in an environment.
Which I think a lot of cube designers are tempted to say, like, tough, get good, my cube is hard, and that's something I'm proud of. But we also hear from listeners all the time, and I think the number one challenge of any cube designer in anywhere is just getting people to draft your cube and introducing an additional barrier to filling a pod, to meeting new people and getting them into your format. And that new barrier being, hey, by the way, you have to learn my custom special rules. That's going to make it harder to just fill the pods every week.
That's really true. And I think that I do see a little bit of that attitude, but I don't think that is most people. I think most people are in the situation you're describing where the biggest challenge is just getting more butts in seats. And really, we need to be conscious of that.
I'm just, you know how people say you should say boots and cats as a way to do like, you know, a little beat?
A vocal? Oh, no.
Okay. I'm just imagining butts in seats and butts in seats and butts in seats. It's pretty good.
I love that for you.
Anyway, go ahead.
So yeah, again, I think that the context is really important. If you're in a context where you have a very stable group, you have the same 8 players for every draft, and you know you're going to have them, they're a captive audience, then that is a position that gives you a lot of flexibility to try more things. But I don't
they're
think
stuck.
That's where...
Abuse them.
Exactly, the butts are in the
take
seats.
Take them for granted. Do it.
But I think that is just not where most cube designers are at. Something else that I think is easy to understate is just how difficult it can be just to comprehend, or not even comprehend, just like remember custom rules. I know before every draft we have of a cube, usually the cube designer has a little bit of a speech, and maybe there's some notes on themes and strategies, stuff to look out for during the draft, as well as just like logistical stuff, like the basics are over here, here's the tokens after the draft, make sure you hand me back, you know, your deck and sideboard facing each other, or pull the basics out, whatever sort of these five or hopefully not more than that kinds of like points to keep in mind. Adding a couple points of custom rules gets really, really intimidating and difficult to just keep it all in your head. And I feel like I am already full up on my pre-draft speech between just sort of notes on like the logistical stuff that you can't really shortcut, that there just isn't a lot of space for people to not, you know, have their eyes glaze over when I get to the custom rules.
We might be in a unique position there too, given that we are so often playing with some number of new people.
That is true.
I do think we are lucky in that we have done a pretty good job getting new people to come out and try Cube Night, and so pretty much every Tuesday there are 1 to 3 people that have not been there before that are there for the first time or have not drafted this cube before and are drafting it for the first time, which makes that little like speech especially important. I think there's a lot of groups that are regular enough that the speech is not as much of a thing, maybe.
Sure.
But that doesn't diminish the fact that it is another aspect to introduce people to.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that, again, the context is really important. It's really valuable to keep in mind who are you designing the cube for, and if that does include players that are newer, or maybe it doesn't include players that are newer, but you'd like it to. You'd like to see a bigger cube group and see more new faces.
And who wouldn't?
Some people maybe, but not me. But what I really want is to get those people, those new faces, to come back the second and third time. So again, for me, it's really important to try and make that an easy experience. Some people also like to go really deep with custom rules. So we have things like the Turbo Cube, which has one tweak to it. So in that environment, all spells and abilities cost 2 mana less to cast. And people have suggested some other alterations to make the gameplay a little bit better. So, for example, something that's been suggested a lot is having the player that is on the draw start with a treasure token in play.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting, I think, that might actually lead to better gameplay. Currently, the player that is on the play, that wins the dice roll, has a big advantage just because the games are so short, and we shouldn't get into that too much, but there is an advantage there, so it makes sense as a way to sort of balance that out, is give the second player a little bit more of, you know, some way to stay in the game. And I've been pretty hesitant to consider adding a second custom roll, because right now, it's sort of, there is this opportunity to buy in and solve this puzzle of, here's all these cards you've maybe seen or maybe haven't seen, but there's one tweak you have to consider. Adding that second tweak, I think, is so much more added complexity and makes it so much more difficult to evaluate the environment.
It does. I think when you're looking at a pack, you can really only consider like one new lens. And the new lens of everything costs 2 less is a lot to think about the first time you draft that cube. It's non-trivial to say, and also if you're on the draw, you start with a treasure. Like, that really does change the evaluation of a lot of cards, right? Like, now you always have an artifact in play on turn one for Tinker or whatever. Not Tinker's not in that cube, but that's just a dumb example where it's like, normally if you think of Tinker as like a committed build around, now it's like, actually, half the time you just always have an artifact and sacrifice to it. Or you can always, even on a lower land count, just play a 2-mana spell on turn one, and your mana fixing is just provided for you, too. You can cast any off-color card on turn one, right? That does actually change how you would evaluate cards in that environment. And yeah, I agree that it would be a lot more for somebody that was new to the cube to also have to process that additional rules modification.
Right. I mean, you're looking at 15 cards you have maybe never seen before, and you're saying, okay, I think describing it as a new lens is a really powerful way to think about it. And you're seeing this card that costs 2 and a white. How much more powerful is this when it costs just a white? Is an interesting question. And it's interesting to look through the pack and interrogate it through that new lens. When you also have the new lens of, oh, this is 2 and a blue for a counterspell, I also have this treasure. So now I have to think through that extra lens of...
Counterspell is a much better example, right?
Yeah,
like you can counterspell on turn 0 now, basically.
Exactly.
If you start with the treasure, yeah.
So I think that it is really easy to understate the complexity of adding multiple custom rules, because it's very easy for me to say you start with a treasure in play. The strategic implications of that are just so much more complicated.
I think it's very common for cube designers to underestimate how much their players are thinking about their environment, given that you as the cube designer have thought about it a whole lot, right?
Right.
And I see a lot of times cube designers, I think, you know, get one step ahead of themselves and trying to solve problems before they happen. And I think it's where a lot of these custom rules come from, where it's like, well, I don't want this to happen, right? Like, I think everyone's going to lose on the draw, so I'm going to start everybody with a treasure. Or I don't want people to have to discard to hand size if they, you know, play a bounce land on turn
right.
two. So I'm just going to go ahead and make a rule ahead of time to make that not the case. And I think it's just good to remember that your players are not going to be thinking about that stuff anywhere nearly as deep as you are. And it's so easy to take that for granted.
Absolutely.
One other thing I'll say about the rules change in the Turbo Cube, which I really like, is that it affects all cards equally. I think some rules modifications only affect certain cards, and then it acts actually kind of an extra layer or like meta layer of, now I'm looking at a card, and first I have to figure out, okay, is this card affected by this rules modification, right? It can even be as dumb as like doing draft packages. I know this is a pretty common way that people, you know, bend the rules or break the rules of a cube, which is that if you draft one card, you get another card, right? And it could either be that you draft one Squadron Hawk and you get two more Squadron Hawks, or it could be that if you draft Dark Depths, you get Thespian Stage or whatever, right? I've seen all different kinds of variations on this. And one of the challenges there, I think, is that I have to think about every card in the pack and like, is this part of a package? And there's all kinds of cards that could be part of a package, whether you decide to make them part of a package or not. And like having that rule only apply to some cards, I think increases the cognitive load of processing the pack and making a pick.
Absolutely. I mean, there you have the advantage that you can actually, you know, write it on the card, you know, write it on the inner sleeve or something like that. So you have a reference, which helps. But I agree. And there's a lot of knock-on effects like, oh, if I take this Thespian Stage, I also get Dark Depths. That also means you're up a card. So maybe if you take enough of those, there is a strategic question of, do you get to draft more sideboard cards or more narrow cards or speculate more? So again, there is this added complexity that maybe you're not seeing immediately. The challenge is, so many of these custom rules that you could add are very easy to understand and explain in themselves when you're just thinking about that one thing, but you're already asking people to draft Magic the Gathering. It's already like at maximum cognitive load. So considering not, is this custom rule easy to understand, but is this easy to understand when you're already at max capacity is a very different question. Something else you touched on a little bit there is sort of the scale of changes and the way that they affect things. I think that's a great point that some custom rules that only affect a small subset of cards is very, very different than something that affects all the cards. So my high-level point about that would just be that when you're thinking about adding custom rules to a cube, it really makes sense to do it if that is the focal point of the experience. If the reason you're getting people to the table is there's something unique and novel here, let's focus on that. What a lot of players I've seen, a lot of cube designers will do is try and basically use custom rules to solve problems. So maybe that's under-supported archetypes they want to add some boost to, the issue you're mentioning of, you know, Squadron Hawk being difficult to make function in a cube, and they'll sort of use these small rules adjustments to fix issues.
Or, you know, I'm just imagining all the different approaches people have that maintain color identity in their commander cube, but don't want you to actually be hemmed in entirely by picking a commander, which I think that's misguided for many reasons, but I've seen a lot of different weird ways to fix that problem of like, well, it's so hard to draft with a color identity in mind. Yeah.
It is.
Maybe don't.
maybe we could remove rules instead. Yeah, and that, I think it just, again, when it is not the focal point, when it is something that is only affecting, you know, even if it's affecting 40% of the cards, that still means I have to sort of parse out, or it's not the thing that is at the front of my brain. It's not like the Turbo Cube where I am thinking about this with relation to every single card. Mm-hmm. It's, oh, I've ignored this for a pack. Two packs I've gone through that I've looked at in this draft didn't have cards that were relevant to this custom rule. I'm now going to forget about it. And that adds a lot of difficulty.
And that might also sound dumb, right? Like, I can definitely imagine some people listening saying, like, well, if you're just going to be a bad drafter and not remember the rules, then I can't help you. But, I mean, all of us have gotten to pack three in a normal draft and forgotten a card we had taken in pack one that actually has some, like, powerful synergy with a card we saw in pack three that we just overlooked. Like, we've all been there. And if you're listening and saying you haven't been there, you're lying to yourself. You've been there. It's happened to all of us. And so adding custom rules on top of that is, yeah, I mean, you're looking at a hard pick and you just overlook the fact that actually this custom rule affects one of these options, or it's a third option I'm not even considering, right? I open the pack, I see two bombs, and there's actually a third card that if I were to process the whole pack more carefully and remember that rule, I might remember that actually that third card's better than these two I'm looking at, but it's just, it's a lot of information to process all at once.
Right. One player in our local group, Max, designed a cube where he had a couple of these small changes, and I think it was actually like a really valuable lesson for the whole group, and he's ended up...
I mean, for me too, right? Like, I think that was... And yeah, Max has rolled back on almost all those rules changes, I believe, which I'm really glad he did it, because I think we all learned, like, yeah, that actually was harder than we expected to. We're all very experienced with cube, with drafting, we do this all the time, and yet it felt overwhelming to have just a couple little tweaks here and there that just add up to... Everything is not quite what you expect it to be.
Right. And I think what's really powerful about that is one of the adjustments that he made is he loves the bounce lands, but hates the experience of having to discard if you have a, you know, difficult hand, or you're on the draw and you want to play your bounce land on turn two, you end up with eight cards in hand. So he removed the maximum hand size rule, and that makes perfect sense. Like, that was fixing a negative experience that players have with Magic.
It's also pretty easy to say, like, well, how often does max hand size actually come up, right? Like, if I remove that rule, how much is it actually going to be abusable? And in our first draft, turns out pretty abusable. There were plenty of people that were like, I have 12 cards in hand. I'll discard. This is great.
I mean, so yeah, it was like a well-intentioned change trying to solve a specific problem, but it both became difficult because there were strategic ways you could abuse it, and it was also very easy to miss, and there were games where somebody discarded a hand size because they just forgot, because it hadn't come up in their first match, and that sort of subtle rules change ended up just being a bigger cost than we had all initially assumed.
Especially because it's really subtle. I'm not even sure if the situation with the bounce land came up in that first draft, but I know other situations where people were over seven cards in hand did come up. It reminds me a little bit of the situation with Mana Burn, right? Where I think the story, right, is that R&D was considering doing away with Mana Burn, and they had everybody that was in the entire department say, keep track of all your games for a whole month, and let's figure out how many times, like, people take damage from Mana Burn, and, like, the game changes for it. And after the entire month, not a single person had, like, taken any Mana Burn damage. It's like, okay, well, this is not a thing anymore, clearly.
Yeah.
Like, it's a rule. You gotta remember it. It's gonna get you sometimes, but it's not actually affecting games in a meaningful way that it's worth having this extra baggage. And I think the bounce line thing is kind of like that. Like, does it happen sometimes? Yeah. Does it mean you lose the game because of it? Probably not. It's like a tiny little feel bad, and that's probably a thing that you just, you know, suffer when it happens rather than introducing a whole new rule that now everybody has to think about the entire time, regardless of if they even have bounce lands in their deck. This is the new thing everyone has to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I think it was also funny that it does actually impact sequencing in more ways than you expect. If you think, how often do I discard to hand size? It's not that often. But how many times do you have a hand where you're like, well, I'm not going to cast Divination this turn. I'm going to do something else so I don't have to discard to hand size. And it actually allows for a lot more weird states where it's like, yeah, I'm just going to cast all my draw spells right away that you wouldn't expect to come up because you're used to just strategically avoiding those situations.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing that I think is a big cost to custom rules is I think it can feel really bad to lose to custom rules. If you're used to cards playing out a certain way and they've been altered, they've been tweaked, there's some, you know, global effect on the board, and especially if it's the person who's come up with the custom rules is kicking your teeth in with them, maybe it's cards you passed in the draft that you didn't realize how impactful they would be. It just sort of takes you into this weird territory that, on one hand, I do want to embrace it because it is a fun new puzzle to solve, but it can also really have this feeling of, well, this isn't really Magic, and if this was a normal game, I would be able to function here better.
Something I mentioned in our previous episode was if someone asked me to draft their cube with custom rules, I look very carefully at them and think, like, did you mess it up? Did you break the game? Did you include cards that are just going to ruin everything because of this custom rule? For this exact reason. I think one of the things that's great about cube design is it's very easy to wash your hands of a whole lot of responsibility because everyone sits down at the table, you know, at equal terms. Everyone gets an equal chance to draft the cube. Even if it's wildly out of balance, everyone got a shot to draft some cards. Maybe there's some huge power outliers that are unbeatable that you could, like, take a little flack for. But as soon as you make a major rules modification, then there's probably some cards that would just literally never have been printed, right, with this rules modification. And so you're playing with fire there, and then you end up in this situation where, yeah, someone losing now doesn't feel like, oh, I lost because I drafted poorly or didn't understand something or I right. sequenced incorrectly or I just got unlucky. It's I lost because that person changed this rule, and that's a feel bad. It really is.
Yeah, it's not just, oh yeah, I lost to Oko because Oko is powerful and is powerful in all the contexts I'm familiar with, but instead something weird happened.
I lost to Gilglobe. What the heck?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, there have been some difficult first-time experiences with the Turbo Cube where people have not had a good time because even though they were playing the same cube, they were not playing the same game. They were not on the same page of how things were changed.
I remember the first time Patrick ever drafted the Degenerate Micro Cube, and he was so excited going into the draft because he was like, I can't wait to play all these broken cards. He drafted a deck he was so excited about. He showed me about it. He was all pumped. I looked over, I'm in the middle of game one, round one, and he just, like, looked at me with his horrible look on his face, like, did, like, the next slash thing and was just having a horrible time because he was playing against a Stax deck who just went turn one, you know, Mishra's Workshop and Trinisphere. And he was like, that's a thing you can
that's
do here?
It?
That's a thing that can happen in this place? And just the lack of, that wasn't even a rules modification. That was just the context was not clearly understood
right.
of, like, hey, yeah, your deck might be sweet, but sometimes you're going to be playing against a turn one Trinisphere, and what happens then, you know?
Yeah, I mean, this is a real risk, the fact that custom rules can literally break the game. You, as a cube designer, have a lot of flexibility and space for creativity just by the cards that you choose to include into a cube, and you really are kind of doing game design with the bumpers on. You know, it's somewhat safe because Wizards has put a lot of time and effort into making sure that most of the Magic cards that exist are not actually broken, and you can have functional, fun games with them. And as soon as you really start to, you know, take things in your own hands and take off those bumpers and start making changes fundamentally to the game, there is a higher level of challenge for the designer to make sure things both, you know, just function by the rules and also is still a fun gameplay experience.
Function by the rules is a real thing too. I have definitely seen cubes where the rules are modified and not in a robust way that it's entirely clear what happens in all situations, right?
Right.
I mean, even...
Which is one of my favorite things about Magic, to
truly,
be honest.
The fact that, like, you can actually modify the rules and have it be, like, totally bulletproof, right?
Right.
Like, the rules modification of the Turbo Cube is abundantly clear. Any judge on the planet could tell you what happens with any card, right? There's not going to be any subjectivity or, you know, difference of opinion of how this rule ought to be applied because Magic's rules are so robust. But it's definitely possible to introduce a new rule that is not as clearly articulated or defined.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that if you play a lot of Magic and then you start playing other board games, and at least if you're like
God.
You and me, you realize
all
like,
the time.
Oh, do I get to roll this dice after I know that piece of information, or does this have to happen
all
first?
The time?
All these edge
I feel
cases.
Like almost every board game I play, I'm like, well, this rule is completely unclear. Like, it does not say what happens in this situation, and I'm so sympathetic to that. It's really hard to think of all the situations that are ever going to come up and how people are going to just process the instructions differently and the way their brains are going to work. But it's really amazing how many board games, and if you start looking around like the Board Games Geek forums, there are tons of threads where it's like, this rule's not clear, what do we as a community want to do in this situation, let's decide so we can you know, have something somewhat consistent.
So I do want to talk about successes and the way that you can make custom rules work. Do you have anything else you want to say about just how high a cost it is?
I think we've hammered that home pretty clearly. I guess it reminds me of this. You and I started a business when we were 21, 22, right? And there was
I remember this.
That's still the business we run to this day. And back when we used to like attend conferences and events and stuff, we would pretty often get asked the question of like, I want to start my own business. Like, what are your tips? Like, how do I start my own business? What should I do? Or should I start my own business? Like, I like what I do. I'm working in this field that I enjoy. Should I be working for myself instead of somebody else? And became kind of a joke, but also really not a joke, which is that I would always just tell people, don't do it. Don't start your own business. And if you are the person that's going to ignore me and do it anyway, then you're the person that should be starting your own business, which kind of makes me want to say to anybody listening, don't do it. Don't change the rules. And if you're going to say to me, no, actually, I'm going to do it anyway because you have some good reason to, then maybe start to think about it. But I think by default, especially if you're like new to cube design or trying to make a new cube group or are in any situation where like you're still getting your footing here, I would definitely just strongly avoid new rules and only take that step when you are like 100% confident that you are ready to get in there and mess with the wiring.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really good point that a lot of people that are new to cube design actually embrace it not because they're looking for, you know, solving a particular problem or because they are interested in a very specific type of gameplay, but they're using it as a tool to create an identity for their cube. They want to say,
yeah,
this is my blank cube and everything is a little bit different here.
I actually think I see it almost more often with like new cube designers who are like, this is my first cube, here are all the things I'm doing, right? Mm-hmm. Like when you draft a fixing land, you get two copies of it, and you know, whatever, like they have like three or four different like little rules they've added,
and these cards are now zombies because I really want them to work in the zombie deck,
right? Which all that I think is like, it's cool because I imagine part of the reason that person got interested in cube is because they knew that was possible. They knew they could actually like do this thing that they wanted to do. I think a lot of times it's somebody that's like trying to fix the Magic game system in some way. And I would actually like, I embrace somebody who wants to like build a cube to make Magic play differently than it like does inherently. But just do that with your card selection, right? Like if you don't want people losing to Mana Screw, if that's the thing you're trying to fix, don't make up a new rule that everyone gets to mana weave their deck. And if you, you know, you get to draw from a deck of lands and a deck of spells and everybody has an abundance emblem in play at all times. Don't do that.
Okay, that sounds kind of cool.
Don't do that. Just build a cube where you try and include cards that minimize that aspect of the game engine that you don't enjoy.
Right. There's a lot of space you can explore just in the card choices.
Yeah.
All that being said, custom rules cubes can be a lot of fun. It is awesome.
Some of my favorite cube experiences.
A very unique novel experience. But I think that really the way to make it work is make that rules modification the centerpiece. Make it not just an afterthought or something else to keep in mind.
It should be the name of the cube.
It should be the name of the cube, and it should be the focal point that people are showing up for. So the Cascade Cube by a friend of the show, Zach, is, I think, a great example of this, where there is a simple rules change. The first spell you cast each turn has Cascade. And this is based on an enchantment that exists, so you can look at the card. There's full rule support for it. There's no ambiguity.
So that one is a lot more complicated. It's worth noting. Like, Zach has a little like cheat sheet of how Cascade relates to mechanics, because I definitely did not know a good chunk of them.
Yes.
At the moment I first, like, what happens when you adventure something? Like, are you cascading based on the mana value of the thing in the top right of the whole card? Are you cascading based off of the mana value of the adventure side? Like, there's a lot of things like that, and Zach even has a cheat sheet to remind you of those things, and still it's like...
I still have to
check that cheat sheet and ask. So that's even a good example of, like, I think that cube is well-designed, well-constructed, well-considered, but also still shows how complicated it is to change a simple rule. You start with this emblem in play. It's like, great, I know how that card works. That card works within Magic's game engine. But now the cube is packed full of cards that are meant to kind of abuse that. And
right.
A lot of those come from blocks that card was not printed in, and you just don't see those interactions very often.
Yeah, but I still think that because it is the focal centerpiece of that in that experience, that's what you're showing up for, it doesn't feel as bad to lose to in the same way, because that's what you signed up for. You knew what you were getting into, and even though you probably expect, like you mentioned, that you're not going to do great the first draft because you have to sort of figure out how the environment works, you're prepared for that experience of something different.
Yes. It's not like, you're going to draft my regular cube, and then I sit down, or right before I open the first pack, you're like, oh, wait, by the way. So all cowards are warriors. That's how my cube works.
Interesting. Okay. So I think having a clear purpose, making it the focal centerpiece of the experience, is really powerful. I think it's also important, like we were saying, just not to do too much. If you can't have two things be the focus. That's not how focus works. It could be how focus works, but
nope,
not...
Nope, Anthony, stick by your guns.
There is only one focus, and because it really does become exponentially more complex when you're trying to keep multiple new things in your head at once. I think another thing that is really important that we've also been touching on to making it work is just make it actually clear and understandable. Make sure you understand the rules nuances. Don't leave a lot of things ambiguous until things actually, you know, until cards hit the table. Make sure it's clear enough that people know what's going on. And I think things like Zach's little cheat sheet, he actually has a card that explains a bunch of different mechanics and, you know, a little table that... It's still complicated, but it's a guide to help you a little bit. Having some sort of helpers like that can really go a long way to making the draft feel more manageable.
And I'll go one step further. I make this recommendation a lot about regular cubes without rules modifications, but I think it's especially true here. Do your best to know all of the rules interactions of your
yes.
own cube, which I think a lot of people don't do even with their like normal cubes, because it can be hard to like look at a whole list and figure out which cards interact in ways I don't understand. But especially if you're doing a rules modified cube, like make sure that you... know what happens in every situation, right? I had to do a whole bunch of reading about Lion's Eye Diamond, which is a complicated card in the rules because of the degenerate micro cube, but I just wanted to make sure I knew, so if someone ever asked me what happens here with Lion's Eye Diamond, I could tell them what happened, because that card's complicated. So doing the same, making sure that you understand the rule clearly enough that like you understand all the different possible interactions. There is a judge's chat IRC, so if you want to like, you know, check yourself and you want someone that knows what they're doing to take a look at it, you can post it over there. I'm not sure how they handle custom. I mean, they're probably, every time I've talked to a Magic judge, they're always really excited to solve a problem. Doesn't matter if the problem is reasonable or you know, completely hypothetical. So I admit they'd be pretty amenable to dealing with your custom rules over there.
Assuming you present the problem, you know, clearly in a simple, concise way, I agree.
But yeah, I would just say make sure you know how the rule changes all the interactions in your cube. And if someone asks, hey, what happens when I do this? You shouldn't go, I don't know, Google it.
Prior to the last CubeCon, I definitely did this for both the cubes that I had, because the Turbo Cube has some weird stuff going on, obviously, which was featured in that event. The weirdest thing that came up when I was just trying to do this exercise myself and make sure, like, I want to understand every possible source of confusion is that Squirrel Link works like Life Link, where it happens, it's not an ability that goes on the stack, and there's, like, two or three cards that interact weirdly with it.
That's a weird one.
That's a weird one. So should we talk a little bit about specific custom rules and the things that we've had the best times with?
Yeah, buddy.
So when we're talking about custom rules, there's a couple different things going on. I feel like the most sort of accessible and easiest to understand is just changing the way the draft works a little bit. You know, we'll often just change up pack sizes and things like that, potentially even changing starting life totals or deck sizes. These are things that are pretty approachable and happen in popular formats like Commander. So it's not too weird, but it's definitely a start down the path to changing the gameplay to, you know, suit whatever you're looking for. I think the Degenerate Microcube is an excellent example of this, even if it's not my favorite gameplay, but really fundamentally changing the way that the environment plays by dramatically cutting down the deck size to just 15 cards. And, you know, what that means is there's this entire sort of strategic depth of, I know I'm going to draw half of my deck, I know my opponent's only going to have very few threats that I need to meaningfully interact with, so it is a relatively simple change that has a lot of strategic depth and changes the way you think about cards when you're looking at them through that lens in a pack.
I will say I am breaking the rules you laid out, and I'm not happy with it, though, because there's another rules change, which is that you don't die to drawing from an empty library. And I have definitely felt like, oh, these two changes makes is so much harder than just having one change. And I think the cube needs both, because if you could just die from decking, then it would change everything so radically that it would just be a whole different cube. And, I mean, that's actually what the original inspiration for that cube had already explored, right? That in that cube, you did die from decking, I believe. And mill was like a whole strategy just to kill your opponent. But that's not what I want to explore there. So that's definitely a challenge, as it does have its two different rules. I will say that I am going to simplify one of the rules changes, which is that right now, the rule is that your minimum deck size is updated to 15. But I've let you play more in the past. You want to play 16, 17, 18?
I always end up playing 16.
And that's actually more complicated than what I'm going to change it to, which is I think just it's exactly 15. You have to register a 15-card deck. Which takes away the question of, like, am I supposed to play more, right? Like, I don't have a great way to recycle my graveyard. Am I just supposed to play 17, 18 cards because I'm going to run out of resources and deck before the game is decided? I think I'm going to change that to be exactly 15. I might even tweak the number a little bit. That's a whole different conversation. But I'm going to make that, I think, a fixed number, not a minimum number, just to make that a little simpler. Like, you got to register 15.
Right. I mean, you're making it simpler in terms of simpler choices for the players to make. I think that's a great
call-out. Less variables to think about, yeah.
I think that's a great call out, because as much as I want to just put this incredible force to say, don't do two custom things at once, it's not worth it. Sometimes it is worth it. Like, there is always exceptions and reasons why if you're looking for particular gameplay, you'll break the rules. But I think by and large, yeah, still sticking just with make one change, make it the focal point.
I think unambiguously of the custom rules cubes we've played, the Degenerate Microcube is the least elegant of them. Like, compared to the Turbo Cube, compared to the Reading Rainbow Cube, I think those are way more successful rules modifications than the DMC is.
I will take that as a compliment. Thank you. So you mentioned the Reading Rainbow Cube. I think this is another great example of a kind of thing you can do. This cube actually has two sort of things going on, but one of them is just the choice of cards that are in the cube. All the cards are gold cards. They're all multicolored, and that's a kind of... It's not a
rules change.
It's not a rules change, but it is a dramatic restriction on the design.
Context shift.
And then the one actual modification is that players start with a Pillar of the Perruns, which is a land that taps for mana of any color to cast multicolored spells. Starts with that in play. So this is another type of modification you can do of just like altering what the initial game state is.
It's one of the best examples, I think, of a custom rule, because you get handed the land at the beginning of the draft, and you're going to start with this in play, right, is all you know.
It's already in front of you.
It's already in front of you, and then the rest is so emergent just from looking at the cards of the pack, right? Like, you just can immediately tell, like, oh, this is how this is going to go. There is that one little, like, strategic depth thing that we've mentioned on the show before, which I think is not always abundantly clear to new players, which is that you can basically play a one- or two-colored deck and just always plan to splash your non-on-color pip with your Pillar of Perruns. So if you just ignore double spelling, which is a big thing to ignore, but if you ignore that for a second, you can just say, well, I can play any card as long as it's at least red or green and only one other pip that's not red or green on just a mana base of mountains and forests. So that is a layer of strategic depth that happens there.
I personally think that's all upside, because it there is this sort of like mind-expanding moment where you're like, oh, I can draft this way. That
it
is really rewarding.
I think it does a little bit contribute to someone being new to it getting stomped by people that know what they're doing,
yeah,
because they don't realize they can actually draft in that way, and they're just trying really hard to figure out middle of the pack, like, what color pair am I, and ignoring cards that are not in that exact color pair. But yeah, I think that's one of the most brilliant rules change cubes, and I've even mentioned that I was skeptical of it at first and had to put my foot in my mouth because it was just a really great draft experience, and to this day, I still feel like I learned things about Magic by playing that cube.
Right, and what's interesting about that, actually, is that wasn't the genesis. The genesis wasn't, let's change the rules of Magic. It was, let's make an old gold cube. wait a minute, this is going to be really hard because how am I going to make my mana base work? And I forget exactly where this idea came from, but that was really solving a problem of wanting this particular, like,
solving a problem Daniel made for himself.
Daniel made this aesthetic challenge of, I want every card to be multi, or specifically have a gold border. So hybrid cards don't count. Your fetch lands don't count because they don't have a gold border. And Pillar of the Piranhas does. So great. So we talked a little bit about the Turbo Cube. This is a cube where all spells and abilities cost 2 generic mana less to cast. So it's sort of like if you have a Helm of the 2 Helms of Awakening.
Yeah.
2 Helms of Awakening in play and a Training Grounds plus a little extra. So again,
Training Grounds reduces by 2.
Training Grounds is 2. Great. I should know these things. So similarly, it is playing all in mechanical space that already exists through cards you can play normally, which means the rules are pretty easy to understand. And it really, I think, like you say, I think it is pretty successful because it affects cards in sort of a symmetrical way. And you, as you're opening up your first pack, do get to have the fun experience of, oh, this card is extremely powerful now, or this works slightly differently.
Have you cut Drakehaven from that cube?
Yes, I cut it as soon as we got back from KubeCon.
Yeah, I think that is a good thing to mention, which is that I think Drakehaven in that cube was similar to, there was a couple of cards in the Reading Rainbow cube, like a Gore Clan Rampager, I believe, which was the one with Blood Rush, which just kind of go against the tide of the rules modification. So based on how you've worded your rules change in the Turbo Cube, you still have to pay for Drakehaven. You don't get to make the Drake for free when you discard or cycle a card.
Which there are some other cards that maybe I should talk to some judges about this, but I'm just cutting Drakehaven, so it's not going to be an issue. But there are cards that, you know, tax your opponent for, you know, counter-target spell unless they pay 3. I do want those effects to work, so I think that I didn't want to just continue to alter the rules or make the rules more flexible because I want it to work.
Whatever, the point is just that the card, when you look at it, in the context of a bunch of other cards that are radically recontextualized, you think, right, well, this surely is also radically recontextualized. And it is in the fact that it costs only blue instead of 2 and a blue, but the actual rules text on the card, once it's in play, behaves exactly the same in a Turbo Cube and a regular cube. This also goes for, there were a couple cards for a while in the Reading Rainbow Cube with activated abilities,
right,
that required colored mana, like cycling abilities or Blood Rush or something. And you can't use mana from Pillar of the Parents to play a Blood Rush ability or any ability. And I think Daniel has cut those cards because of similar reasons. People taking the Gore Clan Rampager and then trying to Blood Rush into being like, oh, actually, you can't do that. And so that's a really good thing to remember, that if you are making this rules modification, try not to include things that are going to trick your players into thinking that it's modified when it's not.
Right. I mean, that's a great point that, like you said at the beginning, you can do a lot just with card selection. If you don't love counterspells and discard, you don't necessarily need to add custom rules that say spells can't be countered. Just don't include counterspells and problem solved. Similarly, if you do already have a custom rule, you can do a lot just with the card choices rather than making the rule more complex. So if there are edge cases that get weird, just cut the cards that would potentially be confusing there. You're not designing Magic from scratch. You're not hosting a tournament where people can bring any cards at all. You just need to make sure it makes sense with the set of cards that you're choosing to bring to the table. Are there any other custom cubes? We've mentioned a bunch already, but that you've just had a great experience with.
I mean, I guess Desert Cubes would fall into this category, it's kind of a different thing. I've enjoyed those. Other ones don't really spring to mind. I've played a lot more cubes with like radically different restrictions on card choices, or, you know, radically different contextualization of cards, like, you know, 2-colored cubes or monocolored cubes or the Devoid Cube or stuff like that. None of those are changing the rules, though. So, no, I don't think any others come to mind that I've played specifically, though I will say I was impressed and delighted with some of the rules modified cubes I've seen up for consideration in the KubeCon polls.
Yeah, and I think that this is sort of a great sort of aspect of this community. Even though we're being a little bit critical and hesitant about how much we're doing these kind of custom rules things, it also shows a tremendous amount of creativity, and it's exciting to see a bunch of these up for vote for the next KubeCon because they're just really cool and novel. Speaking of these cool cubes that people are submitting to KubeCon, a couple of them have been submitted to our Pack One Pick One inbox, including the Changeling Cube by Donald K. Magic, who we've actually already done a Pack One Pick One from this, but this is a very cool environment where all creatures have Changeling, and I think this really plays into the sort of rules change plus the card choices really need to mesh together here. But because all creatures have Changeling, you can definitely expect there's going to be a lot of creatures that care about creature types in interesting ways. The designer of the Infinity Cube has also sent that in. This is a cube where players have infinite colorless mana at all times, so it's kind of similar to the Turbo Cube, but even turbo-er. I've been infinity minus 2'd up.
Well, I would also say, and, you know, no offense to you, I think this is an even cleaner rules modification. there's no opportunity for confusion around, like, can I pay for this with this discount? It's just like, no, you got it at all times. Like, anything that requires colorless mana, you can just pay for it. It doesn't matter how you're paying for it.
But is there mana burn?
So I was really impressed with that limitation. It was in a bracket with another cube that was very similar, except you basically had just a channel emblem and would allow you to pay a life for a generic mana at any time or a colorless mana at any time, which I thought was also really cool.
Yeah, the channel cube feels like... like, my brain is already heating up just trying to think of, like, how much do I want to actually use my life total as a resource when it is very literally just there, a resource I can use all the time. This one I don't think has been sent into us, but they did call out the Turbo Cube in the introduction, so I think that it would be fine if we did a pack one, pick one from that, too.
I think the Channel Cube and the Infinity Cube are close enough in their rules modifications that I'd be interested in doing a pack one, pick one from each of those, just to wrap this episode up. How does that sound?
That sounds great.
Let's start with the Channel Cube. So again, just to be 100% clear, the rules modification is all players begin the game with an emblem that says pay one life to add a colorless mana, which is exactly what you can do during the resolution of channel, the spell. It's where it gets its name. I am already in love with...
During the resolution or during the entirety of your turn after the resolution of channel?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
It literally doesn't matter. I think it's only during the resolution of channel. I don't think you can just keep paying until the end of the game. It doesn't matter. I'm in love with this because I think when I look at something like the Infinity Cube, I am interested in the like rules modification. I'm interested in solving this new puzzle, but my immediate concern is like, oh boy, these sound like big games. If, like, everyone gets infinite mana at all times, they can just keep dumping resources into the cards in their hand and just like going off like crazy. I really like the idea of that resource being there, but limited by my life total in a very direct way. I think that's very cool and will make the cube feel way different from the Infinity Cube, even though the rules modification is fundamentally kind of similar.
Right, absolutely.
I've got a pack in front of us, Anthony. I'm going to read the cards, and then let's actually talk about the rules text of anyone we're considering, just so we can be clear about how we're evaluating these. Our first pack from the Channel Cube is Traveler's Amulet, Dark Ritual, Black Sun Zenith, Dranith Stinger, Savai Crystal, Inner Fire, Bloodghast, Chandra the Firebrand, Sanguine Bond, Roving Harper, Sungrass Prairie, Porcelain Legionnaire, Displacer Kitten, Flame Blitz, and Beneath the Sands. All right, Anthony, what's the pick? Come on, you got this figured out, right?
I have no idea. I'm definitely going in ready to lose this immediately on my first draft of this cube. I mean, so there are some interesting things that kind of stand out to me. We are still constrained by colored mana. We still have to pay for that. So that means the things that kind of stand out to me that are interesting are Traveler's Amulet, which you can go and just fetch up a basic for just two life. Savai Crystal, we can get this into play for three life and actually have... yeah, I think I'm talking myself into Savai Crystal. That seems really good. We can also pay two life to cycle it for free. It's also funny here to have Dark Ritual in an environment that's already sort of like... mana as a resource is kind of broken here, but Dark Ritual is still pretty appealing, pretty powerful, because it'll let you cheat out stuff like perhaps that Sanguine Bond down the pack. And then Black Sun Zenith is kind of interesting as a thing to see here, because the rules modifications almost just turn this into a toxic deluge, which is kind of cool. I'm feeling a little bit lost, but I'm kind of talking myself into the Savai Crystal because I feel like it is just fast mana, assuming I can just pay three life and that'll be fine.
I was going to take the crystal too, actually.
Okay.
I think it's because then your like investment of life pays off over multiple turns in terms of more mana, right?
Right.
Whereas opposed to all these other things are kind of one shot. Even the Traveler's Amulet, that just has land cycling, basically, right? Like,
sure,
that's not going up any resources. Savai Crystal is turning a card into like ramp and this additional resource over time. It's mana fixing. So I think that's my pick too. My only question is Black Sun Zenith broken here? And I don't think it is, because it still requires double black. And it does turn it into a Toxic Deluge. It's better than Toxic Deluge considerably because it's minus one counters, so it's going to kill stuff and even just shrink things that it can't entirely kill, and also just shuffles back into your deck, so you just get to do it over and over again if you get to draw your whole deck, which it seems like maybe you will. The other thing about Black Sun Zenith is that I see a lot of cycling cards here for generic mana, and obviously with only 20 life, you can't just, you know, cycle through your whole deck like you can in the Turbo Cube, but I still think getting close to decking might be a concern in this place, and then having Black Sun Zenith to basically guarantee you never deck is kind of nice. So I'm taking Crystal. My only card that I think maybe is better potentially is Black Sun Zenith, with the caveat that I also think I'm going to lose this first draft. The other card I think is interesting is Porcelain Legionnaire, which is just free board presence.
It's very funny. So you could pay four life just to put this in play?
Four life for a 3-1 first strike, which is great. I mean, that's actually probably, you know, that's probably my next pick. It's probably Crystal and then Porcelain Legionnaire, which plays into my approach of a Turbo Cube 2, which is like, take anything I can do for free first.
Okay, wait, two things. So, Chandra, probably pretty powerful. It's not a Chandra that we're used to seeing, but I think that it's here for a specific reason because it only has one red pip. So, yeah. Play one red mana, three life, and I have a Chandra that ticks up immediately and just starts dealing one damage here or there. That could be pretty powerful. I mean, talk about getting board presence on the board early for very little mana investment. That could be really powerful. Something else that I just realized.
The inner fire also just makes like a bunch of mana. All these cards are, I mean, everything's radically recontextualized. What a shocker.
It's really tough. The other thing I just realized is Sungrass Prairie is the filter land, but it's the filter land that you pay generic mana to activate it.
It's the original cycle of filter lands where it didn't have any other mana ability. It's just put a generic mana in, get green white out.
I think that might be the pick.
I'm still taking the crystal. I don't know. It's hard. It's really hard. I'll say the cards I'm least interested in, just maybe as a way of... well, I mean, honestly... Okay, I'm not that interested in Bloodghast. I think I'm supposed to be discarding it, and then there's probably other ways to play multiple lands a turn, maybe, which is how Bloodghast is supposed to be good. It also, I guess, incentivizes your opponent to not go below 10 to their channel emblem. But
sure.
I will say I'm not that interested in Bloodghast. That has to be proven to me. I'm also not that interested in Dark Ritual. I think it's a lot worse here than it would be in a normal cube because everybody has access to a broken amount of mana. Maybe there's some really high devotion black spells that are worth, you know, getting out early, but then I have to draw my one Dark Ritual and my high devotion black spell, so I'm not interested in that either. The existence of Sanguine Bond is interesting because the first thing I was looking for is, like, is there life gain in this pack? Because life gain seems really good in this cube where you can turn your life directly into colorless mana. We have no life gain in the pack, but we do have a Sanguine Bond suggesting there is life gain in the cube. So I'm looking for that maybe in the future. Yeah, I think I'm still taking the free stuff, then the land, then all of the free cyclers, including Traveler's Amulet. It's probably my pick order. I'm not that high on Sanguine Bond either. I have to imagine there's not that much life gain here, because if I'm already gaining that much life to like
cards... You always have stuff to do with your life.
Right. So it's like, is Sanguine Bond really going to be worth it? Because the life gain's already so good, do I have to make the life gain better? I don't know. It's hard to say.
You know, with multiple cycling cards in this pack, I mean, there's also Beneath the Sands, which is, you know, not a card I'm super interested in, but again, it's just like pointing at a really high density of cycling cards. Drain a Stinger actually kind of becomes interesting, because if you can threaten to cycle a bunch and deal a bunch of damage to your opponent directly to their face, that's going to sort of put a lot of pressure on them to not be able to necessarily play their spells out as quickly as
that's the other thing I love about this rules restriction, is I feel like in cubes like this, like if a Turbo Cube, life total kind of doesn't matter. It's
right.
Like, well, eventually you're going to die because someone's deck is going to go off and you're going to get stifled or whatever. Here, it really matters. Like, incremental life loss does really matter here, which I think would give an aggro deck like a very different texture, where the aggro deck is partially just a prison deck, but it's also just saying, now you can't cast your quote-unquote expensive spells because I have hamstrung your life total and you just can't play your card that is five in a blue and you were just going to play it for a blue, but now you can't afford to pay the five life. Like, that's kind of cool to me.
Okay, so I'm feeling pretty good about Crystal at this point. I do think the land is very powerful, but I think the fact that this is going to add one of three colors to whatever land I play on turn one is just a lot more flexibility. I don't need to be able to spend exactly green-white. That seems like the good pick, and you can cycle it later for no mana.
Yeah, I'm taking Crystal 2. I'm just going to take free stuff until it's proven to me that other cards are better, I think. Like, Chandra does seem good, right? Playing a Chandra on turn one seems fine. I assume playing a Chandra on turn one is kind of the baseline of this format. And what I hope Savai Crystal will let me do is play two Chandras on turn one, right? Like, now I have the Chandra I play with my land drop and the Chandra I play with my three life Savai Crystal. So I'm taking that as an enabler, and I assume I will get plenty of powerful things to play on turn one alongside it later on.
Yeah, sounds like a good plan. Thank you, Dragon M137, for not sending that in, but calling us out in your overview.
Yeah, very cool cube. Did Donald win this? Who won this poll? Did Donald win
this poll?
Donald
did win, so hopefully the channel cube will still be there.
Yeah, I hope you bring the cube with you, Dragon. I'd be excited to play it. All right, Infinity Cube. Similar rules modification.
This feels so much safer.
Similar rules modification. I think we're going to have a lot different card selection based on the slight difference here. In this cube, you have access to infinity colorless mana at all times. Like the channel cube, but you're not paying life, you just get access to it all the time. It also looks like the draft is a little bit different. For a pot of 8, we're doing 3 packs of 16 instead of 15, so one card bigger, which is something at least. Our pack is Pegasus Guardian, Psychic Pickpocket, Intellect Devourer. We're 3 cards in. I don't know any of the rules text on any of these cards.
I was thinking the same thing. There's a lot of text here.
Burn Away, Rishkar's Expertise, Sun Titan, Eye of Vecna, Traxos Scourge of Krug, Havoc Jester, Cord of Calling, Disrupting Shoal, Sever the Bloodline, Rabble Rousing, Jar of Eyeballs, Sarkhan's Unsealing, and Prized Statue. Uh-oh, what do we do?
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to read all these cards. Just kidding, Magic players don't read their cards, they just make choices based on what the art is. So, having played the Turbo Cube a bunch, and this is not exactly the same but does feel similar, I'm really tempted to take Eye of Vecna, which is just going to cycle immediately, and then at the beginning of my upkeep, 4/2 life, let me draw a card. So it's kind of funny maybe that we're looking at the channel cube and I'm like, this is scary, I don't want to have to pay all of my life, but Eye of Vecna is going to, for no mana but a bunch of life, let me draw a bunch of cards, just like a free Howling Mine.
I'm going to take Prize Statue here. My thought process is similar to the last cube we talked about. We see Pegasus Guardian, Psychic Pickpocket, Intellect Devourer, Burn Away,
a lot of things,
Rabble
that have a
Rousing,
big generic
Sarkhan's
mana cost.
Unsealing, Sever the Bloodline. These are all a decent-sized generic mana cost, and then one single colored pip. And similar to my logic for taking the Savai Crystal, I'm taking the Prize Statue here, which will allow me to, on turn one, cast two of these things, right? I have my land drop, which lets me play either Pegasus Guardian or Psychic Pickpocket or Intellect Devourer or whatever after I finish reading them. And then I also have my treasure token off of the Prize Statue to cast another one immediately. Basically, you're prioritizing value and I'm prioritizing tempo, right? Like, the Eye of Vecna is going to be much better in a long game, but I'm kind of gambling on a broken start with a Prize Statue. Eye of Vecna, I think, is my second pick. The other card I have to, like, think about a little harder is Jar of Eyeballs. Artifact.
I mean, those free spells are definitely appealing.
I definitely read the free spells the hardest. Jar of Eyeballs, artifact. Whenever a creature you control dies, put 2 eyeball counters on Jar of Eyeballs. Okay, I already have a flavor problem. What happens if it's a Cyclops or something with a million eyes or something, like a big spider? It should have eyes equal to the number of eyes the creature has.
That would be broken in spider decks is the problem.
Pay 3 and tap it, by which I mean just tap it. Remove all eyeball counters from Jar of Eyeballs. Look at the top X cards of your library where X is the number of eyeball counters. Move this way, put one of them into your hand, the other on the bottom of your library in a random order.
So every time a creature you control dies, you get to
draw a card. You get to draw a card with some selection depending on how many eyeballs you want to spend on each card draw.
How many eyeballs do you want to spend?
So I think that's probably okay, but it's definitely slower and requires my deck be built around my creatures dying. So I think it's just going to be Prize Statue for me.
Okay, I'm actually going to change my mind. If this was my first draft of this...
You're taking Sarkhan's Unsealing?
I'm taking Sarkhan's Unsealing.
That's the other card I was thinking about, for sure.
Like, the ceiling on this card is very insane.
You mean the Unsealing?
Like, this is the kind of card that I imagine I want to be playing this on turn one and then just dealing a ton of damage with a lot of other huge spells.
Yeah, I mean, this is an enchantment for 3 and a red, aka just a red. Whenever you cast a creature spell with power 4, 5, or 6, Sarkhan's Unsealing deals 4 damage to any target. Already pretty big deal.
And
whenever
I'm looking at the creatures in this pack and that they're, well,
power.
Half and half.
Power. Not mana value. And whenever you cast a creature spell with power 7 or greater, Sarkhan's Unsealing deals 4 damage to each opponent and each creature or planeswalker they control.
You just cast this for 1 red, and then you cast Traxos for free, and that's just going to be great.
Yeah, see, my thing is that I want to do that and another thing on turn 1. I'm looking at that, and it does seem really good, but I expect there's probably a couple dozen cards in this cube that are as good as Sarkhan's Unsealing. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that's just like the best card, and I'm like totally overlooking it, but based on what else is in this pack, a lot of these other cards are also really scary on turn one, so I think I'm still taking the Prize Statue to let me double scary spell on turn one, is my goal.
Spooky.
So yeah, I think these are all great examples of rules modified cubes. Again, I think of all the ones we've talked about, my own rules modified cube is by far the least elegant, the least approachable, and the least friendly to new drafters. Negative points to me. I should do a better job, but that's where I find myself. If I were to make a new rules modified cube today, I would certainly start with different goals than I did with the Dinner at Microcube.
Well, thank you to Crunch for sending in that cube. Hopefully it as well will be at KubeCon, even though it is not in the main event.
Good time to remind everybody, we do have a form on our website where you can submit your cube for consideration for a pack one, pick one. We've got a long queue, but Anthony wrote a nice little algorithm that, you know, decides based on time in queue and tries to give a little bit of favor to people who have been there for longer. So the earlier you get it in, the more likely that it'll be done on a future episode.
We have been doing fewer pack one pick ones recently just because we've had a lot of guests and other big topics, but we're going to try and get them in if people like them.
No other news, I don't think, Anthony. So, everybody, be good out there, you know? Just stay frosty.
Don't make a custom rules cube unless you really want to, and then have fun with it.
But we told you not to, for the record. For the record, we told you not to. And on that bombshell, that's it for this episode of Lucky Paper Radio. All of our music is produced by DJ James Nasty. All the magic cards are produced by Wizards of the Coast. The interruptions are produced by my dog, scratching on the door to get into the office and then on the door to get out of the office, over and over again, constantly throughout the entire recording. This podcast is produced by Anthony and I, thinking really hard about magic cards and then speaking into microphones about it. Thanks for a great topic, Anthony.
Thank you for indulging me in some weird cubes.